This is Neat and Mixed from Hops and Spirits.
I was going to say, we're super professional here. Now, we'll see by the end if we still are. But we're in for another fun night. It's a flight night, and we're going to the hoppy side of things. But, you know, we still like to have some barrel-aged fun. So we're going to run the gamut of beer with Andy Cobb of Butchertown Brewing. Andy, welcome in.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
We appreciate it. We got four beers tonight, and as I told Brandon, these might be the four most different beers that I could have picked out of your cooler.
Excellent. Excellent. That's what we pride ourselves in, diversity, so yeah.
So I guess we'll start it off with the Franklin Street Pilsner. And can you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's a German-style Pilsner. We use a little bit of Halotau and a little bit of Saaz hops in that one. I think the IBU is somewhere in the range of 20, 21. So it's a very lightly hopped crusher. Maybe my favorite beer that we make for on a daily, kind of a daily drinker. Just kind of crispy and refreshing, crispy boy. It's actually named after the street in Butchertown that I live on. So, so it's a Butchertown's got a quite the brewing history. There's a lot of Germans that settled here, and they were butchers and beer makers. So you know, there was a lot of breweries around here, and so that's kind of my nod to, you know, the kind of a traditional style, and a nod to some of the early brewers here in this area.
Yeah. Well, that's what, 5.5% ABV, so it's a little, not super light, but like you said, got crushable, easy drinker.
Yeah, it's my go-to. If, you know, I like to have that at least a few cans of that at home. I'm working to get my kegerator back, so I'm going to get it back in operation so I can have a keg of it sitting around. But I've always had some cans of that sitting around. It's great with pizza, tacos, spaghetti, and meatballs, you know, whatever.
It's really good, honestly. Like, you're right, you get the taste, the German style taste of the beer, but it's like got a little bit of slight sweetness to me, mm-hmm. but it's very smooth, like you said, very, very crushable.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah, that's what I like about it.
About five or six of those on a hot day for sure.
Yeah, yeah, nice pool beer.
While you're out there at the smoker.
Yeah, while you're man in the grill, smoker, whatever. Just yep.
Yep, it's beer flavored beer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously you mentioned you grew up in the Butchertown area, you currently live there. How did Butchertown Brewing, though, get started?
Yeah, so we had kind of a rocky start. I don't want to go too far into it, but we got two cease and desists about the name. There was I won't mention the company, but there was you can look it up on Google. There was a company that thought that they owned the name Butchertown. And I said, no, you don't. And so there was some pushback, and a bunch of money later, I kept the name. So, so it was a little bit of a rocky start. We did start during COVID. So we were doing packaged beer. We were doing cans and bottles out the door. We got the X's. 6 feet apart outside our upstairs door. That's where we started, is upstairs at Melwood, at the right above the tap room, our existing tap room. And we actually had a little tap room up there. So we had the brewery in the back and then a tap room in the front. The city of Louisville made us put a 2-hour firewall in between so that anything happened in the back, it was protected. The people in the front were protected. I guess that makes sense. So we did that and got our license, got our TTB license, got our ABC, all of our ABC licenses. It's funny, in Louisville's the only county, or it was at the time, where you have to get the ABC license from them first, and then you get the state license. Every other county in Kentucky, you get the state license first, and then the county comes after. So I guess Louisville has some other rules or whatever, but We got all those licenses, and we got everything fired up January 2020, and started serving to-go beer. Had a little table set up, masked up, handed out the beer. It was touchless and all that stuff, so we had all the gloves and all that stuff, and handed people the beer as they walked up. So that was our start, man. It was crazy. Crazy to start like that. There's like five breweries in Louisville that started around that time. So it was just a crazy time to start. I was like, what am I doing?
Isn't that wild to think about now, about mm-hmm. Those times?
Well, and I think...
What we had to go through?
Yeah, man. And, you know, and I don't even... Like, I think it's just now coming back. I think it's been slowly coming up. And I think we're finally... I was talking to a buddy about today. He just got back from Chicago. And he said that. He said Chicago's back, and I was like, you know, I think we are too, because we had a big event Wednesday. We had a Valentine's Day / collaboration day, so we had a whole list of these collaboration beers that we've done, and a bunch of beers from these breweries that we've done collaborations with, and we must have had, I don't know, 30 different SKUs or something, and it was rough because I was the guy pouring the beers. So we had a sheet, these sheets printed out, and it had, you know, you picked the beer and had each brewery and then the beer underneath each brewery. Like, I had to make a grid, like a spreadsheet kind of thing. We printed those out. People and my bartender would circle them and hand them to me. And I had a stack of like 10 of them at one point, and it was freaking me out because I was like, you think about that. You got 30 SKUs. You're trying to find the right can. Like, where's the can? That's not it, you know? So anyway, but it worked out. Everybody, people that show up to those kinds of events know the deal. You know, they know what that they're going to be patient, and they know it's a special thing, so they're going to be patient and drink their beer. But it was a good time, and it was crowded. I mean, we had a line. It was great.
That's awesome.
No, I think you're right. Things are starting to come back, and you touched on this a little bit, and I don't want to get into that fun part of. the battle for the name. But you know, was there ever thought of a different name at any point, or were you going to be Butchertown Brewing because you're in Butchertown?
Oh, they wanted me to have a different name. I was just stuck on the name. I love the name. It's such a historic part of town. I knew it's where I live. It's got so many brewery roots, probably more than any other part of town. And I mean, they definitely suggested that I change the name in their cease and desist when they sent it. But I mean, the assonance, you know, the two B's, the Butchertown Brewing, I mean, it just works, right?
You didn't want it Cobb Brewing?
I just didn't think it had the, I mean, I could have done that, but, or my initials, AC Brewing. I mean, I gave that a little bit of thought. I was like, is this worth it? But I fell in love with the name and haven't looked back. And this is my Hop de Lee. So I have this trademarked. So there's a hop there. Louisville along with New Orleans, I guess, has a kind of a fleur de lis sign. So this is the Butchertown Brewing Hop de Lis.
Now that's clever.
I like it.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, I got the guys at the Louisville Ale Trail. I don't know if y'all have ever talked to those guys. They were pissed off when I did it because they were like, why didn't we think about that? Why didn't we think of that?
It is marketing genius. I mean, for where you're at and what you do. I mean, I love it.
Yeah.
And you know, you talked about launching two during COVID. There, like you said, there was about five of you that did it. What was it like to really do that? Because, you know, normally when you think of a brewery opening back before COVID, you know, people would rush out to a new place, and you'd be able to sell draft and all that, but you had to go, like, the complete opposite way.
I know it was a lot of online. It was a lot of marketing online. I mean, we still market online, obviously, but you didn't have – I mean, some people don't realize that taproom sales are the most profitable for – I mean, the margins are much better than canning. I mean, you got all the costs of the canning, the labeling, and all that. So having a taproom is the way to go. But the other thing is, you know, we were the things are already in motion. Like, it was it wasn't a, you know, should we pump the brakes now? It's like, no. We had signed leases. We had licenses in progress. You know, it was going, you know, and it's like, we got to figure it out. We got to make the best of it. We got to do the best thing we can do, the best we can do, you know, because it wasn't going to stop. I mean, all the equipment was there, and it's like, what are you going to do? You know, you put the brakes on, you start immediately losing money. So what you do is you try to make as much money as you can, you know, under the circumstances. So that's what we did. Then we started cranking out cans. We've come a long way. We obviously we have a tap room now, but those were early beers, and any brewer would tell you, early beers, you're dialing in your system, you're trying the different what hops you like and that are working together. And I mean, I come from a homebrew background, and so I have some idea of what I like, but it's a different deal. Yeast, you're using a lot more yeast, it's a lot more expensive, hops are a lot more expensive, quantities higher, so it's a lot more at stake, you know. So we definitely made mistakes along the way, but it was tough to make mistakes and make these investments and not be able to have the tap room to have those margins. So we had to just wait. We had to just suck it up and wait, sell as many cans as we could, and then get that tap room open as soon as we could. I mean, the day that they said we could open up, we opened up. You know, we didn't wait. You know, it was like, we're open. You know, but there were, you know, if you remember, there were still rules, right? There were still, you know, rules about capacity, and you know, you can only have certain number of people in there, and all this. So we still, you know, even though we were open, it was still slowly like this, you know. So yeah. It's crazy. I mean, I'd rather not remember those days, but you know, it's kind of like coming from a small town or something. It's like, you know, it's a good place to be from, I guess, you know, because you got those, you appreciate what you got now, right?
Right. Yep, yeah. You mentioned that you come from a homebrewing background. I was going to ask you, you know, how did you get into it? Where did you get your start at? Was it, like you mentioned, was it a home brewing? Did you start at? Because, and you know, just kind of talk about, like, say, you know, some of our audience, our listeners, are thinking about trying to get into the brewing. Where should they start? I mean, because, you know, somebody like myself, I've thought about it. Or John, I've talked to him about it several times. Like, I want to start homebrewing, or even start into learning the process of getting, you know, just brewing, whether it's just for fun and I just do it for friends and family and we just drink some homebrew beers, or who knows, maybe one day when I retire I can, you know, start a brewery or something. But
yeah,
what advice would you give, and is that the way you would start out, homebrewing first and then try to figure it out, or what?
Yeah, definitely brew on a small scale first. I mean, I'll say that I'm a little bit mixed about it, because home brewing was more fun in a way, because you don't have there's not all this money at stake. You don't have to worry about putting out a bad beer. You just dump it. I mean, you can do that. You do that at the pro level, but you're throwing away a lot of money too. You know what I mean? If you do that. Correct. But yeah, I mean, I started in, I'm going to show my age here. I'm old. So I started in the 90s brewing, and I really loved in college, I was drinking, you know, Le Fin du Monde and some of these German styles, Hofbra and Celebrator. I was drinking those in college, and my friends were like, here's a beast, Milwaukee's beast. And I'm like, I'll stick with my, you know, Franz O'Connor, you know. So I was like, well, I want to make this, because I'm the kind of person just wants to try everything, right? And if I don't like it, I won't do it again. But I really started to like the homebrew. I started like Belgian beers, and German style. So that was kind of where I got my start. And then from there, and I wasn't consistently brewing. I would take a year off here, a couple years off there, you know, just got busy with life. And then I kind of was getting back into it. And then I had a bunch of homebrewing friends, Spencer Guy, who is at Atrium. He and I would brew beer together once in a while and we'd hang out. Meantime, I had a technology company that I had started, and I sold it to a company out in Sacramento, and I was like, I'm gonna start a brewery, you know what I mean? So yeah. I already had the idea in my head that I wanted to do it, and I was kind of already starting the process. I had started a company to do it, and opened a bank account and all that stuff. And then I ended up selling this company, and I was like, okay, well, this is going to be my retirement. Then I'm going to open a brewery, and I guess I'll retire there. I always joke because a buddy of mine worked at Humana for like 30 years, and he was a director there, and he retired as a director, and he went to welding school. And so I started the brewery, he went to welding school, and I'm like, what are we doing, man? We're going the wrong direction. Like we should be like playing golf or something. Like I'm working harder than I've ever worked in my life. But anyway, I digress. So that's kind of how I did start with the homebrew background, but I didn't really get serious about opening a brewery. Now I will tell you this: my business background did help running a business. I ran that business for 15 years, and the biggest challenge to me has been the sales and marketing aspect. Building a brand, that is really hard. And I know we're going to talk about collaborations a little bit, but that has been one of the biggest, pushes that I've made. Because, I mean, if you think about it, just on a really rudimentary level, like if a brewery is building this brand and I do a collaboration with them, I get the benefit of some of the branding that they've done too, you know? So it, to me, and it's even, I mean, I'll talk about collaboration for a minute. The Arcane Dan over at Arcane says it best, Arcane Ale Works down in Florida. He says drinking beer, with friends is great. Making beer with friends is fantastic. So I have to second that. It's like I don't even know how to explain it. You're making this thing together. You're coming up with the idea, designing the beer. You know, what do you like? What do you like? I'm going to put my little piece in here. You put your little piece in here. And then, you know, let's make this thing. But anyway, so I digress about that. I apologize. Back to the idea of a business, that is the hardest part. Is the sales and marketing aspect. I mean, I don't know if you, I know you guys, you know, try to market the podcast and all that, right? Your podcast. So, you know, you understand some of those challenges. But, you know, getting people out to try your product, that's another difference is in home brewing, you know, you got a small audience. And that's one of the downsides of home brewing is you can only make a certain amount of beer. Whereas on the professional level, you make a bunch of beer and you put it out there. And, you know, it's really cool to see people going, wow, this is great, you know, or I've never had anything like this, or my favorite, which is I don't like sours, and I'm like, here, try this. And they're like, wow, okay, I like this, you know, so anyway.
No, that's really cool. Now, I agree with you. I can only imagine how hard it would be to start, you know, do the marketing, especially the business background of it as well, because, you know, at the end of the day, if you do that, you start it. It is a business, and there's a lot of fine tuning that goes into that, a lot of attention to detail in order to get it to where it needs to go.
Yeah, and I always say that making good beer is a necessary but not sufficient condition to having a successful brewery. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You have to make good beer. You have to make good beer. You're right. But that may not be enough. In this current environment we're in, it may not be enough.
Yep. No, you're not wrong. You're definitely not wrong.
I was going to say, and let's go to one of those sours that you mentioned. And as I said, we're going to go wild here because we went from a Pilsner now to the Imperial Mango.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Your mango colada sour.
Yep. I'm glad you made one of those. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about this guy.
So, oh, wow. Look at that. Yep. There you go. This is our, so this is our gluten-free base. We like to have a lot of fun with this one. So we like to take that particular base and we like to do all kinds of stuff with it. With that particular base, we like to make kind of cocktail inspired beers. I think you have the Zool too, right? Don't you have the Zool collab? Is that one of the other ones you got? Yeah,
to
good.
Kill the pain.
Okay.
Yep, that'll be our next one.
Right. So that's a painkiller, right? This one's a colada. We have a whole colada series. We do. We even have an ube colada, which is the purple sweet potato from the Philippines, and it's got kind of a nutty flavor to it. So you have the nutty flavor along with the cream of coconut. But you know, these are sweet, but they're also boozy, just like a cocktail, right? So you have a pina colada on the beach, you're going to get that booze kick. And you're going to get the sweetness of the cream of coconut and the fruit flavor. So that said, I'm just a cocktail nut, right? I love some cocktails. So that's what I'm going for there with that whole series.
Brandon, you made a face, like a woo face. What's the you?
Well, my face was that I was completely shocked of how good it is. I was thinking I was going to try this, and it's just going to be just nothing but just a sweet bomb, you know. I like a little bit of sweet, but if it's too sweet, it's not my style. But you're definitely right when it's you get the sweet, but then you get the booze, and then to me that just mellows it out. And I'll be getting a case of these next time I go to the beach.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
I'd rather have this than just a normal pina colada, honestly.
It's fun to sip on.
You ever put this on ice or anything like that?
You know, we've been asked about that. We don't even have an ice maker in the tap room. So when we get an ice maker, we'll do that. Some people said make a good slushy, those slushy machines and all that. So who knows? Maybe somewhere we'll do that. Yeah.
That's really good. That's dangerous.
Boozy, yeah.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, it's really dangerously delicious. That's what we've got a... we've got a coffee tea series that we do with that. And these are usually lines on our tap lines. So we have 15 taps, and we usually dedicate a line to Pilsner, IPA, a blonde ale, which is probably my least favorite because it has zero hops in it, but whatever. I just think it's not my favorite, but anyway, it's a good introduction. Some people just absolutely love it. So it's a good intro, non-hop. I don't like hops. Okay. Here, try this one. And then, we have the coffee tea line is, we have a Vietnamese coffee. My assistant brewer loves making, cold brew coffee. So he will get with local coffee places, and we'll do, we've done was Hinterhof. Coffee in Louisville. It's in Germantown. We did a collaboration with them, and it was a Vietnamese coffee. And so he made the Vietnamese coffee cold brew, and it was amazing. A little bit of chicory in it. So we take that, and then we have some, we put a cream base in it, whether it's coconut cream or lactose-free vanilla ice cream. And then it's like a latte. Drinks like a latte. So it's like a boozy latte. So we have a matcha, chai latte, things like that. So anyway, we're just having fun,
No, this is great. This is great.
Sounds like you guys are just doing all kinds of crazy stuff, which is awesome. Which is what I love to see because we talk about it all the time, John and I. It's like you go to the breweries and a lot of them make really good brews, but you go get the same stuff. You get the same West Coast IPA, East Coast IPA, the same brown ale, the same porter. You know, it's just kind of all the same stuff. Like, and I love that you guys are doing stuff way outside the box. So,
yeah, some people might say we're doing too much. We're too much outside the box. It's like, can I just have a brown ale? You know.
And it's fine to have all that stuff, but I think if you guys are doing stuff like this that is really good and it's different, because nobody else is doing this stuff, and if you get it right, then you got something, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I took a lot of inspiration both from a branding standpoint and a style, you know, creating the style standpoint from a brewery in Florida called Corporate Ladder. So I stole a bunch of stuff from them, and they're like, you're welcome to it, take it. So we did a collaboration with them that was in a honey bourbon barrel. So we took kind of a similar base, and we did it down there. They're in Palmetto, which is close to Bradenton, Florida, south of Tampa. And they've kind of made a name for themselves, kind of doing these type of styles. So we just had that collaboration come out. We did serve that one last Wednesday at the collaboration event. So we did a honey barrel, and then we did it was a peach smash cocktail-inspired beer, and it's fantastic. So, I mean, these guys really know what they're doing. But my point is, I'm taking inspiration for them and kind of taking that and then putting my own spin on it and pushing some limits. We're working on a cream stout, which is like a boozy milkshake. So right now we've got one on that. Yeah, we got one right on right now that's hazelnut chocolate. So, you know, whatever. We like to do pistachio stouts. We have a pistachio stout that people love. We have a pistachio, what we call pistachio hard milkshake. So it's lactose-free vanilla ice cream with some pistachio in there and green, you know. So, yeah.
I love it.
John, we got to get up to the tap room, man.
I accidentally stumbled upon it.
Yeah, you were at an event there at the Melwood, right?
Yeah, I was at a wedding, and then I looked, and I was like, oh, it's right there. Like, literally, like five steps away. So, but speaking of Melwood, how did you all end up there? It's a cool spot, you know, definitely old industrial, but a lot of cool neighbors that you got there, too. So how did you end up there?
Well, I'll be honest, it was not my first choice. You do what you do. You start looking around at different places that are for lease, right? Let's find a spot. So I was looking around and I met with them. The location there has some issues. It's a little bit kind of what I'd call landlocked. So it's not walkable. It has a sidewalk. There's a sidewalk there. There's apartments down the street. But it's just not, people just don't pass by there a lot. Cars pass by there all the time, right? So, I guess one of the things is the rent was cheap. So I was like, okay, that's good. But then I kind of warmed up to it after I went and looked at it. They said they would work with me. You know, I think they, I worked out some kind of deal with them where I didn't, you know, I paid like a minimal lease or a minimal rent, you know, monthly rent until I got up and running. So they were just really good working with me, and they've been great. They, you know, something's not working, they fix it right away. And, they've been great like that. So I have no complaints with them right now, about that, any of that. I just wish it was a little more walkable. There is this is probably too much information, but there's a trolley hop thing that used to happen a few years ago, and I guess it just quit because of COVID or something. But there's a stop right out in front. So when it was going, it goes up and down this street called Frankfort Avenue, which is a busy street. It's got a bunch of restaurants, but it's a really long street, so it's tough to walk the whole length of it. So all the businesses in between like to have that trolley going back and forth. So they would do it something like every first Friday of the month or something. So we're trying to bring that back. I'm actually having a meeting on Wednesday, and I'm going to beg them to bring it back. And me and a bunch of other businesses, I've already talked to a bunch of other businesses, and they're like, yeah, we need that. Like, that's going to really help out. So, but yeah, I mean, so they were part of that. But it's just a kind of a cool old building, too. I always tell people the fourth floor's haunted. You know, don't go up there. I will say it's a 100-year-old meatpacking plant. And the owner, I love telling this story, the owner, when the owner bought the place and wanted to turn it to an art center, had Buddhist monks come through and bless it to get the bad juju out. So that's a true story. So we don't have to worry about bad juju in the beer. It's all gone. So we're good to go.
I like it.
Yeah. But we're happy there. And then we were upstairs for a while, right? We were brewing, and they had the tap room right next to it. Probably about 20, I think it was capacity was something like 26, 26 seats. So very small. And then we moved, when was that? 2022, December 2022, we moved downstairs, and that changed everything. So we doubled our sales immediately. And we've been just growing ever since. So that was a big deal because you've got the seating out between the pizza place, Danny Max Pizza, great pizza. They won Louisville's best pizza like every year or something. So we've got a nice little courtyard with seating in between us. So he'll come in. They'll actually bring the pizza. You can just sit in the tapper and order the pizza. They'll bring it over. So it's really worked out. We've settled in and we're very happy there. So,
well, like I said, I stumbled across the parking lot. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, you were there for beer and pizza. Yeah, oh, well, beer and pizza. Yeah, beer pizza, beer and tacos. Mm. Yeah, I'm trying to get him to make a taco pizza. So I'm working on him for that Taco Tuesday pizza. make all best of all worlds, right?
Well, and like you said, it's a cool spot where you're down on that other level, because that's where you got the event side, you know, where they have two big rooms kind of right across the parking lot, and you just walk in and, you know, you got all the restaurants, you got you.
Yep.
And it's a neat little spot.
Yeah, I think more people are finding out about it, and I think it's mainly because people like you that, you know, were at an event, didn't know anything about it. I didn't know they were here, you know. So that's contributing to some of our growth as well. But, you know, social media is our main growth mechanism for sure.
Well, now we're going to keep this rolling.
Uh-oh.
The third one is one of your collabs.
Yep.
It's the Kill of the Time Rum Barrel Aged Beer. Can you talk a little bit about it and your collab?
Yeah. So... Brad West and I have known each other from Zool. I've known each other for a few years. We actually met at a beer fest called Pastry Town up in New York City. We met at Other Half, and we both were like, hey, I'm starting a brewery. You are too? So that's cool. So, and Zool has done a great job of marketing. They've grown incredibly. Just kudos to those guys. But yeah, I reached out to him about doing a collaboration, and you know, we'd see each other at festivals and stuff. So yeah, we should do something. And then I was like, hey Brad, let's do this. Like, so he was like, yeah man, let's do it. So we took that same base, and they have a fest called Kill the Lights in the fall every year, right? And it's a stout fest, really. It's like a dark beer fest. So they call it Kill the Lights. And I was thinking about calling this Painkiller, you know, because I love a painkiller that has nutmeg in it. So it's like a true painkiller flavor. So I was like, why don't we call this instead of Painkiller, which I think there's some kind of rule where you can't call it a painkiller or something. There's somebody owns that or something. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to call this Kill the Pain as an homage to their Kill the Lights event. So here we are, Kill the Pain. So pain, it's a painkiller.
I like it.
Yeah. So that's got orange, pineapple, cream of coconut, and a little bit of nutmeg in it. And yes, our bartenders, when they were serving it, had a little nutmeg dispenser, and we sprinkled a little nutmeg when we had it on tap. Because we like to do that stuff. So that one is rum barrel aged too. So we took that and aged it in a rum barrel for, I think it was like 13, 14 months. That's got a, you can probably pick the rum up in there. It's very boozy. So that one,
it's a lot more, yeah. It's more boozy. It's got more booze flavor to it than the first one, the Imperial yeah. Mango.
Yeah, that's the rum. Sure. That's the rum contributing that.
To me, it's just really good. It's very smooth. It's not something that's just going to like overpower for by no means. But you can definitely tell the rum comes through for sure. But I love it. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I'm very happy with that one. That may be the best sour we've ever made.
Well, and, you know, for those that don't know, how much work goes into bringing a barrel-aged beer to life?
Well, there's a lot of different components to that. It depends on what kind of beer you're going to put in the barrel. I like to do a lot of barrel-aged stouts. I have a membership where members buy their bottles up front. And then so I take that investment and I make a beer and put them in barrels, because all the beers that I sell to the members as part of their membership are barrel-aged beers. So I like to do a lot of barrel-aged stouts. I love barrel-aged barley wines too. I think, just my personal opinion, all barley wines should be barrel-aged. English barley wine styles, that's really the only style I like to drink. But they're so sweet, they need that barrel to... they need that barrel expression to give you that oak and the booze. So, and the time will take it out. They'll oxidize a little bit over time, which is kind of nice. It gives a nice, all those kind of three things come together and they calm that sweetness down and they give you a nice little punch that balances out the sweetness, right? So, you know, if you know you're drinking a good barrel-aged barley wine if you get a Werther's, it tastes like a bourbon Werther's, right? So that's what I always shoot for when I do barrel-aged barley wines.
That doesn't sound bad at all.
Yeah, we've got, we did one with Whiskey Hill, a collaboration with Whiskey Hill up in Chicago, and it was fantastic. I still have a couple of bottles left and I'm just clutching onto them. You know, I don't want them to go. We did one with Scout and Scholar, a collaboration, barley wine collaboration, and Lee Northcutt down there. We had three barrels. You know Lee?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Lee's awesome. He's comes from Florida. He's got some of that Florida pedigree. So we did it. We did that barley wine collaboration. And I had to push him a little bit. I'm gonna call him out here a little bit, because what we did, we had three barrels, and I begged him, we released two of the barrels, and that third barrel, I was like, Lee, can we pretty please, with sugar on top, hold on to that last barrel, and he agreed. So we still have not released that last one. That sucker's gonna be like, I'm just saying. Unless he listens to this podcast, I hope he doesn't think about it. Like, and just let it sit there and keep going. I mean, we might be looking at a 3-year barley wine. That would be amazing. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully he's forgotten about it back in the corner.
That leads me into this question too. So when you are about barrel aging barley wine, what is that sweet spot for you, in your opinion, on how long to let it go, when to dump it, when to tap it,
So it does depend on the beer a little bit. All right. So barley wines for me, I mean, depending on the gravity you put it in, how sweet it is when you put it in, there may be no limit. I had a 10-year barley wine this past weekend. Yeah, and I had a 4.5 one over at Revolution a few years ago. Amazing. Like, you can't even explain it, right? I mean, it's like, it was like some kind of dessert that you'd have at a, you know, like a flan caramel, but it was like, it was creamy though too, which I cannot explain. But anyway, it was just amazing, that the 4.5 year, and then the 10 year, what they did, this was at Side Project. I went to their Stout Fest this past weekend, the Stout Week, and we had that 10 year, and it was you could tell it was really sweet because it had to be. If you're planning on putting a barley wine, or any beer for that matter, in a barrel for 10 years, it's got to be really sweet, because that's going to start getting tempered every year, right? Because you're going to get the tannins from the wood, and all that stuff can overtake the beer and not make it taste as good, you know? So those sugars in there really help offset some of that. So I would say I like to be, for barley wines, I like to be minimum 2 years. And then for stouts, I like to be, I'm starting to get where I want in that range too, but I had one in my membership last year that was 20 months, and it was perfect. But I do, you know, you always wonder, it's like, what if we kept it in there for, you know, a few more months, what would have happened? Right. But it was just tasting so good. And another thing that I kind of struggle with, not that you guys are asking about this, but whether to adjunct or not. Right? So do I add some toasted coconut to this, or some vanilla, or some, you know, but I have had so lucky. I've been so lucky to have these barrels, the expression from these barrels that are contributing to the stout base, that have been so lucky that I'm like, I just tell my members, I'm like, I can't do it. I do not have the heart to put anything else in this beer. It's just so good the way it is, you know? Sometimes you'll taste one and you'll be like, you'll taste, you know, so we do tastings probably every 6 months or so just to check in on the barrels. And sometimes I'll check and be like, this needs something. Sometimes it's more time. Sometimes time can fix those things, right? But other times I will be like, this, we need to, I'm getting what, too much wood, or I'm getting whatever. And then you got some options. You got a blend. You can blend with some other stuff that has kind of offsets that, has the opposite flavors of that. But you got to have barrels to do that. I don't have a ton of barrels right now. I'm working on it. Or you can add some stuff to it and kind of enhance the flavors, or bring out those flavors to kind of complement the flavor that you're getting from the barrel. So those are tough decisions to make sometimes, because, you know, I'm starting to get known for just straight barrel stouts instead of stouts that have adjuncts in them. But I do love, if it works with the beer, I love some adjuncts, you know, like the pistachio stout. You know, people love that one. I love that one. So it just works. And we put a little bit of barrel-aged beer in that one and blend it with our base stout.
No, I like you taking that approach of not always using the adjunct, because I think sometimes people miss out on just a damn good barrel-aged beer. Like, I mean, that's some of my favorite beers nowadays. And you talked about this, like, with the collabs, and I was going to save this one for after this next pour, but I'm going to go into it because when I think about, you know, you mentioned Scout and Scholar, I love Lee and them down there, and I remember, because I couldn't get down there, you know, I'd look for their collabs up here in Lexington all the time. Yeah. Like, that would be one of my first ones I'd go to. So obviously that's what you're talking about. When you do those collabs, you get your name out there, you, people like you, but you guys take it a little step further than just local all the time. You go nationally as well. Why is that?
Yeah. I don't want to give away my strategy here, my growth strategy here. but yeah, I mean, Corporate Ladder, we did Corporate Ladder pretty early on. I mean, that beer just came out, and it's been in a bourbon barrel for probably a year and a half. So we've done, it's been a long time on that one. So why, you know, my girlfriend Erica and I love to go to beer fests. We want the best of the best. So we travel to go to beer fests when we can, okay? So when you go there, you meet people. You meet brewers, you meet you know, people that love craft beer, and I've met a lot of these people along the way. You know, some of them I've sought out because I love their beer. Some of them I wouldn't do a collab with someone that I didn't love their beer, or I didn't see a synergy there, you know. It's kind of a coming together of not only what we love to make and what they love to make, but also what their customers love that they love to drink and what our customers love to drink, right? So, I mean, Corporate Ladder is just is a great fit. Zool's a great fit for that. Kyle at Horace, great fit for that too, because we're doing so much barrelizing. I was perfect to do a stout with him. I guess I'm kind of optimistic. So I'm looking longer term. Our tagline is Louisville's most interesting beer, but you know, people are starting to know us in Indianapolis and Chicago and, you know, all these places that we're doing collaborations with. We just did a collaboration with Arcane down in Florida. They just released that about a month ago. And so, you know, their customers now know about us. And we're doing kind of the same kind of thing that they are, right? So, I'm not sure if that answers the question, but that's my best guess at why we're doing that.
So when you go to these beer fests and you meet these new brewers and you try these new beers and new, you know, from new breweries or whatever, and you love the beer, you love the juice, you have a good connection with them. Are they, and you say you don't know them, like you're not friends with them or don't know them from the industry or whatever, but are most brewers, are they open to doing collaborations, or is it just kind of like a, it's like a territorial thing, or is it super hard to like get them to do collaborations or what?
Well, I've had, how do I put this? I have, it's been harder to do certain local collaborations than it has outside, because if you're in Florida, everything's good. You're not a threat. You're not competition, you know. Locally I've had a little bit of, it's been tricky, but I'm just doing my thing. So, you know, but I really enjoyed doing the collaboration with Ethereal. We did that. Those guys are great, man. I mean, we really had a good time.
I was going to ask you about that one. You just did that one recently, correct?
Yeah, we did that within the last month, yeah. Yeah, in fact, I've done four collaborations in the last month. Something like that, yeah. I mean, it's we were at Hoosier up in Indy, Greenwood, just south of Indy. Did a collaboration with them. I mean, I don't know if it's exactly four, but it's more than you know, it's a few. The Ethereum one was a barley wine, and putting that into barrels, and that's going to be amazing. Brandon is a fantastic brewer. Yeah. Much better brewer than I am.
Yeah, I was going to ask you when that one's going to be released.
Like I said, I hope it stays in the barrel for a long, long time, but that's going to be up to those guys. Usually some people don't realize this, but the host brewery, whoever actually brews the beer, is the one that makes the decision about, you know, you work together, you know, you work together on the recipe and like, here's what I like, here's what I don't like, you know, that kind of thing. Well, let's do this together. But then the host brewery, it's their job to implement it. and make it happen. And then what happens with it, you know, if you pray really hard, maybe you'll get a keg or a few bottles. But that the host brewery really decides. A lot of people don't know that.
And you took the next question right out of my mouth. It's like, how does that work? How does that decide who gets to tap the
dude? I've been working on my mind reading skills, and it's working. It seems like it's kind of working.
Well, we also have simple minds.
Well, we're in good company then. We're all in good company.
So let's go to that last one. And this is when you talk about being able to put stuff in barrels for a good while, do fun things.
Yeah.
This is called Idlewild. This is with your membership bottle club. A stout aged for 12 months in a Woodford Reserve vanilla bourbon barrel, then 6 months in a Russell's Reserve bourbon barrel.
Yeah. Yeah, I love this beer. I love this beer. So this one, where do I start with this one? This one was actually not a member bottle, but it was a member, first dibs. So as part of the membership, they get four releases a year, two bottles each release, and they we do a party four times a year. We start at 9:30 in the morning, and we do a bottle share, and there's like 50 bottles on the table at 9:30 in the morning. It's ridiculous, but we're professionals. So we have a great time. It's a private event in the tap room for all our members four times a year. And then they pick up their bottles and head home and go to sleep. Kyle Harrop at Horace is an accountant. He doesn't work directly with NASA, but he's a subcontractor for NASA. So he drives all over the country, all the different places, Kennedy Space Center and Tennessee, Oak Ridge in Tennessee, and all these, you know. So he travels all over. So I said, hey, let's do something. I'm good friends with one of his members, Damon. And so Damon is always posting about his beers and is a big fan. I'm a big fan. So he said, yeah, let's do it. So he said, I'll be driving through Louisville. You know, I can come hang out for a couple hours. We did the design, the recipe design over, you know, back and forth over the a month ahead or whatever, so I can get all the ingredients lined up. And then the funny thing about Kyle was, I thought I was crazy when it comes to like boiling the beer to make it you know, really concentrated. But we were boiling for like, I think we boiled this one for like 3 days. So we normally do a 2 day boil, but he was like, let's keep going. He said, I'd like to be in this range. And he was like, can we keep going? And I was like, yep, let's keep going. He's like, and I'd text him, you know, here's where we are now. And he's like, can we keep going? And I was like, yeah, let's keep going. So we kept going. And then this one, we were able to, what we did was when it was done, we just kegged it. And then we said, let's wait on the right barrel. And this barrel popped up from, I think it was, oh boy, I better not get this wrong. I better not say it. The barrel broker we got it from. But anyway, we got this. Noah at this barrel place. you know who you are, Noah.
Simple minds. It's okay.
Yeah, right. We're like, hey, because Kyle's new Noah. He's got the connections. And I'm like, hey, I was making sure to copy him on my email to Noah. I was like, hey, Noah, you guys got anything special that we might be able to put this beer in? You know, we're willing to wait, you know, all that. And he said, we got a Woodford vanilla. And we're like, what's that? So apparently they took vanilla beans and made vanilla bourbon out of it, or vanilla extract or something. And then they took the bourbon out and they gave it to us fresh, still had all the vanilla beans in it. So we put the beer in there, And it was just it was, I mean, you put your nose in there and it was a vanilla bomb. You could smell it. So we put the beer in there and just waited. And I will be honest, I was getting nervous, and I started emailing Kyle, and I was like, man, I'm nervous about the vanilla. Is it going to last? Because it's just wonderful right now. Is it going to last? I said, it's not as, it seems like it's settling down or something. He's like, maybe we might need to double barrel it. And he's the much more of an expert in barrel aging than I am. And he said, we may need to double barrel this one. And I was like, perfect. So then I was able to get a Russell's Reserve 10-year barrel, and we moved over to that one. And I mean, you guys are tasting it now. I mean, I think it's amazing.
It's one of the better stouts, especially the locally stouts that I've had. I'm not kidding. Like,
awesome.
You can just see, like, it's kind of, when you pour it in the glass, it's kind of syrupy a little bit, but
yes.
Sometimes I might scare people off, but I mean, this is really good. Like, I get a lot of dark chocolate flavor, hazelnuts,
yep.
Coffee, vanilla, obviously.
Yep.
But
you get a little hint of sweetness at the front.
Correct. Yeah.
Is it boozy? Is it still boozy at the end? I haven't had one in a little bit. Okay. So it's got a little kick to it at the end.
I think that's obviously from the double barrel.
The double barrel, yep. Yes, sir. Yep.
That's what gives it that kick, and it makes it it mellows it out. And
yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. We were very happy with that one. So I sent Kyle, Damon, my friend who's a member, said that Kyle told him that he never gets, that when he does, he has the goal, the Guinness Book of World Records for most collabs. He's got something like 400 collaborations. So I'm behind. Damon said he rarely gets bottles when he does collaborations, because it's the host brewery's beer. So he said he rarely gets bottles when he does collaboration. So I sent him a couple bottles of this, and he really liked it too. So, yeah, it turned out really well.
It's really good, and I'm not a huge stout guy. I'm getting into that now as we do more of this stuff. I wasn't an IPA guy until I started doing the podcast, and then you give me enough IPAs, eventually I learned how to like them.
Yeah.
I mean, you could pour this in a bourbon glass, Glencairn, and just,
yeah. Look, let me see the fingers. It's got some fingers on it. Doesn't it have some legs on it?
Oh, it does. It does.
Kind of hangs around.
And it's got.
Yeah. Oh, wow, yeah.
And it leaves a color, it leaves a film on the inside of the glass. I don't know if you can see it or not, but.
Yep.
It kind of leaves that film of something like soy sauce would leave, if you know what I'm talking about. But it's not obviously that. But
as long as it doesn't taste like soy sauce.
Oh, no. Not even close.
Yeah.
That's the next barrel-aged thing, right?
Yeah, hey, it's out there, right? It's out there. I mean, this is why, that beer is why I do what I do. Like, there's about three or four. Most of them are member bottles, but there's three or four ones that I'm barrel-aged stouts that I'm super proud of. That's one of them. Very happy with that one.
No, and rightfully so. And it's cool to see the double barreling and just everything you put into it. And you mentioned you're a couple years in. You had a fun start to all this with cease and desist, COVID, everything. what's the future? What you can tell us? I don't want to give away your business plan, but what's the future look like right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to continue to build the brand through collaborations. I'd like to get a little bit more of a regional presence and a national presence. So that's all tied in with collaborations and things like that. I'd love it if when people come into town, we're one of the breweries they go to. We've got a lot of good breweries in Louisville. I'd just love to be one of them. You know what I mean? I would like to, short term, I'd like to get better at my hazy IPAs. I'm on track to doing that. That's one thing that I feel like we have not been doing as well as we could. So I want to have a little more of a variety of hazy IPAs and also do our kind of our core hazy IPAs, do that one as well as we can. That's kind of a that's going to happen soon in the next probably the next couple batches. But yeah, I mean, I think long term, I mean, I'd love to outgrow where we are right now. I'd love to have maybe a second tap room at some point, but I don't want to jump the gun. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be we're gonna increase our distribution footprint. Even though you do take a little bit of a hit on the distribution, you know, you they're taking care of everything after you send it out the door, right? And it, there's a double bonus there because you are making money on it, but you're also getting your name out there. So that's another branding thing. So I'm all about branding, sales and marketing. That is where it's been a lot of my focus. Just continue to make great beer. I'm going to continue to improve my Pilsner, my IPA. Do like to do as many local collabs as I can. Love doing that. And then just keep reaching out, doing collabs. We got a collab with Hop Lore up in Fort Wayne coming up. We've got Mortalis coming up in upstate New York, and we're going to be doing a collab with them in the fall. Southern Grist, we're working on a collab with those guys in Nashville. So we got some interesting things coming up. I'm trying to get Dan from Arcane up here. He actually has family up here, so he should be coming up here. So I'm going to give as much shit as I can about that. So yeah, I want him to come up, do a collaboration with him, drink some bourbon, you know, come up here and drink some bourbon with me and, make some beer, you know? So yeah, I think that's generally the plan. You know, I'm not trying to be a corporate brewery or anything like that. I want to have my hands on the beer all the time, but, I would like for everybody to know about us and everybody to try our beer because it's, you know, we love doing it.
Well, hopefully we can help you out from our end on the promotion and marketing of you because everything I've had tonight has been fantastic, and I'm not just saying that.
I appreciate that, Brandon.
Because everybody watches our bourbon reviews, they know that I'm pretty straight shooter when it comes to if things are good or not. But this has been, I've enjoyed it.
Awesome.
You seem like a cool dude.
I've enjoyed talking to you guys, man. This is great. Why don't you guys let me know next time you're in town, and we'll hang out.
Absolutely. I'm going to get with John. Like, we need to make just come up for a weekend or a Saturday and just come to the tap room. And
you got it, man.
Have a good time.
He knows Absolutely. How to get in touch with me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And I actually know where it's at now too. So that's even better.
Yeah. You just walk straight in now. You don't have to wander around. We'll get some pizza too. Get some of that Danny Max pizza.
I love it. I love it. Andy, thank you so much. Truly an interesting spread. I mean, a Pilsner, Imperial Mango Sour, Painkiller Sour, Rum Barrel Aged, and then obviously finishing off with a double barreled stout. Dude, this has been a blast and some great pours.
Awesome. You guys are a little tipsier than we've started, but you'll be fine.
It'll be all right. It ain't nothing we ain't seen before.
That's right. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate you having me on.
Find more from Hops and Spirits at hopspirits.com.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.